Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
College baseball fans, it's time for the D1 Baseball Podcast with Mike Rooney, Aaron Fitt, and Kendall Rogers. Let's win every podcast. Now, here's the pride of the Newtown Edgemont Little League, Coach Rooney.
Hello and welcome to the 33 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney. Tonight's episode brought to us by our good friends at S2 Cognition. I'm going to go off script here. S2 Cognition, bottom line, they are measuring cognitive function in baseball, particularly for hitters. And it doesn't matter how good your swing is, how athletic you are, exit velos, bat speed, none of it matters if you make bad decisions at home plate. You've got to swing at the strikes and take the balls. And S2 Cognition has an assessment where you or your son or your daughter can get some measurements on how good am I at making decisions when it comes to the moment of truth in baseball or softball. Get the information. Once you know, then you can do something about it. Knowledge is power. And speaking of knowledgeable and powerful people, I am joined by the great Joe Healy, like a five-star recruit when it comes to brain power. How are you, Jose?
Doing well, Runes. Yeah, the swinging at strikes and taking balls is really, really important unless you have the raw power of Jack Caglione or the bat-to-ball skills of J.J. Weatherhold, at which point you can swing at whatever, it's fine.
That's right.
But those are two guys that they'll chase a little bit, but it doesn't really matter. Like, they're going to figure it out.
So Jack Caglione, correct me if I'm wrong, he had 33 home runs this year? 34?
Correct, yes.
33. If Jack Caglione actually swings at strikes and takes balls, like, what is possible? Is 50 possible? Because, by the way, Jack Caglione, as much as we love Jack Tani, he's swinging at any white object coming at him. Like, there is no take on his menu.
Yeah, it's hard to put a ceiling on what he could do from a power perspective next year if that just gets even marginally better. We'll talk about, you and I are going to do a podcast with David Seifert here soon where we talk about some of this stuff, but, you know, the ball just comes off his bat differently. I know it's a cliche, but it's absolutely true. I was talking with some of the Team USA coaches the other day, and that's more or less what they said is like, there's a lot of guys who can run the ball out of the yard for the collegiate national team, but he's just a cut above everybody else in that regard. And it's still the practice day in Omaha before the Thursday before things got started. His was the most impressive batting practice round I saw. I mean, it was line drives over the bleachers in right center, not these towering moon shots. It was just absolute squared up line drives that just kept going. Just an incredible, incredible BP. And, you know, when I saw him playing against Chinese Taipei and Japan with the collegiate national team, because they were here in my backyard, you saw the other side of it, which is there were also some kind of ugly swings, but man, when he barrels a ball up, there's just nobody else in college baseball like it.
No, there's no question. He is an anomaly in every way. So, Joe, as they say in the Northeast, we have an agenda for this call. We have a full-blown agenda. So we're going to talk about some of your Cape Cod observations. You and the great Mrs. Healy were up in the Cape for a while, or on the Cape, I should say. We're going to do you guys have this really cool thing on SEC Extra called Transfer Portal Updates that are, I would say marquee names that are moving around in our game. Then we will finish you guys have another cool series on SEC Extra called SEC Season in Review. You're going team by team. So I want to quiz you on that. Today is Wednesday, my piece on the whole concept of what if we tweak our postseason? What if we go field of 72 with 32 hosts dropped on the website? And so the action on Twitter has been great. I wish it was more positive than negative, but I love the action. I want the action. Here's the only two requests I have. Please read the piece. If only thing you're reacting to is the headline on Twitter, not helpful. I need you to read the piece so that you can give me real feedback on the real blood and guts of the field of 72. So that's number one. And number two, tell me why you do or don't like it. As you pointed out, Joe, what was your favorite response today?
Just the response of terrible idea. That's all that's
So great. Not in any way helpful. Not helpful at all. Oh,
everybody's a critic.
Oh gosh, that's actually non-feedback. It's so not helpful. I have to discard it. So
yeah.
Oh my. Gosh.
Yeah. The only thing that would have been worse is if that person had been a little bit meaner about it. Like, terrible idea. You're an idiot, right? I mean, that's the only thing that could have been less helpful.
Yeah, there was one of there was one like that. Like somebody, some commenter put, like, it was really, really crass and profane. He put, like, God effing, you know, stop us. No, like, it was just like, it was just all cuss words. Just what it was a fancy cussy way of saying no. And I was like, well, okay, that's I'm looking for feedback. No one's saying it's a perfect idea. I want smart people thinking about this.
It does. So. It is interesting that I understand there's vitriol sometimes when you write something that has a critique of a team or a player or something in it. I understand, but the stakes are pretty low on this. Like, it's a hypothetical.
It's a make-believe.
Yes. Yeah. It's a hypothetical NCAA tournament format. The whole idea of which is you put out there just to be like, look, here's an alternative. Isn't this kind of fun? And like, there's so many people out there that are just like, no, this is awful. Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, okay. You know, you don't have to like it, but like, at least just think this is, you should at least think this is a cool exercise that Mike Rooney put a lot of effort into putting a 72 team field together. And you know, at the very least, just appreciate that work. You don't have to like it, but don't just make it, you know, that it was a stupid exercise to begin with.
Yeah. And I think part of it is just change. Like, people hate change. Hate change. I my aversion to change is really at a high level. The great Jennifer Rooney will say, hey, we should change. And I'm already out. I'm already a nay vote. As she said the C word, I'm out. So I get that perspective. But for this, to your point, Joe, it's fun. Please read it. Give real feedback. You know, I got great feedback from Tom Reardon today, who's the SID at UNCW, where he just said, hey, like, how would this affect how crazy the summers become for coaches when you talk about the portal and renewal deadlines and the draft? And so that was fun to talk through. Kendall brought up a great point. Like, hey, I actually don't know if more home teams means more money because we are selling tournament passes for the regional. And I feel like I was able to refute that. I think I actually now, instead of selling one weekend pass, you're selling three weekend passes and it'd be more money, I think. But anyway.
My thing, and then we can move on. Although I think it's really interesting and worth the discussion, but my thing is, because I've been asked this on radio too. I mean, because talk about expanding the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments has been in the air, and so naturally it kind of comes up where people say, "Well, what about baseball?" And my response has always been like, "I'm a soft yes," mostly because I've seen the ideas you've even before you published this. Like, you've been talking to me and Aaron and Kendall and everybody about this for a couple of years now. So I'm aware of what it could be, and I like that. So I'm a soft yes on it. But my next part is I'm less concerned about the number and kind of more concerned about something we frankly can't really control, which is how we get to that number, which is like, look, I make a living covering SEC baseball. So I don't necessarily want to bite the hand that feeds, but I'm not that interested in having 14 SEC teams in the field.
Yes.
If we go to 72 or even 12, probably. Yep. Right. I'm more interested in having a second team from a very good mid-major. I'm not saying take two from every mid-major. That's not obviously not mathematically possible, but taking a second team from a league that's like the SoCon that's usually pretty good and never gets a second team, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm more interested in, and I'm just a little worried that it won't be that. And it's a hard job for the selection committee. We talk about that every year. But so I'm less concerned with the how many and more of the how we arrive at that number. And that's just something that we're never going to be able to legislate because it's humans in the room choosing a field.
Yeah, very fair. And a spoiler alert, I did address that concern because that's a real concern. Like, hey, we expand the field and we're only the rich are only getting richer. And what was the point? Like, that's a real concern. And, you know, when I looked back on past instances, you know, I was able to address that. The other, and then we will definitely move on. The other thing that was funny on Twitter was people saying, it's fine as it is, just fix the selection process. That is actually not a real answer. That is someone saying to me, it's fine, just grow hair and improve your eyesight. Like, that's you're chasing a ghost if you think that switching from RPI to net fixes the problem. I should say that's my opinion, that changing the metric and the criteria I think that's a fool's errand, but whatever. Yeah, reasonable minds can disagree.
It's also a bit of a contradiction. It's fine, semicolon, but here's what needs to be fixed.
I love that. Yeah, it's fine. Just get the 64 teams right. Okay, that's good. Right. Helpful.
Sure.
Helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, love that. All right, Joe. Let's get to the matters at hand. You are famous for rankings in my mind. So, I'm gonna ask you for an impromptu ranking. So you and your wife went to the Cape. What were your favorite things about the trip? Could be baseball, could be non-baseball. For some of us who are college baseball fans who are contemplating a trip to the Cape for the summer of 2024, what were your favorite things?
Yeah, first of all, just blanket, get out there if you can. I get that it's hard to get to. You got to fly into Boston or Providence and then drive it. Yeah, there actually is an airport in Hyannis that you can fly to, but it's, you know, you're going to have to connect probably in Boston or New York anyway. So it's like, well, you know, which would you prefer? But so it's tough to get out there. I know it's not cheap to get there, but if you can do it, if you've got the means and the time, I highly recommend it. I'll give you a little bit of baseball, a little bit of not. We'll start with the not baseball. Lobster rolls. You can't swing a cat without hitting a good lobster roll out there. You know, it's just, like, I am at this point 35-40% lobster roll, at least right now, for another week or so, probably. So that was great. Probably pushed the upper levels of mercury in my system for the amount of seafood I had. So
it's all fixable.
That was good. But it's an ideal summer, like, temperature. The temperatures are just really good. If you're someone like me who, look, I'm pretty fair skinned, as you are as well, Runes. So, like, the beach can be a bit of a hazard for folks like us. And that still is the case. Still sunblock up. I still wear a long sleeve, like, fishing shirt on the beach to protect arms and shoulders and back.
Smart.
But just in terms of, like, you're also not putting on top of that at the Cape, just the oppressive heat and humidity, just super pleasant. You know, I like a good walk on the beach. I'm more of a walk on the beach versus a sit on the beach kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You know, great for that. The water's nice and cool. So when it is warm, you can use the water to cool off. So that's obviously great. Baseball wise, you know, and I said this because I'm in the middle of reading your friend and mine, Ryan McGee's new book, Welcome to the Circus of Baseball.
Love that. I have that on my Kindle. It's on deck.
It's incredible. And I hope I'm not bungling that name. It's something along those lines. I think it's Welcome to the Circus of Baseball. And you know, he kind of talks wistfully and nostalgically about the soul of minor league baseball, especially as it was in the 90s. Because as minor league baseball has become bigger business, it's lost a little bit of that charm. Well, I'm here to tell you that a lot of that old soul of minor league baseball still exists on the Cape. Now, it's a little different. They're not doing wacky in between innings, you know, sideshow kind of stuff, but all of them are played in public parks. There's no admission. They do look for donations at the door because they do run the league on donations, but it's super laid back. It's super community focused. I mean, the people who live in these towns, whether seasonally or year round, love their team. And gosh darn it, they want their teams to win. Like, it is not just like, hey, let's go out here and develop some players and have some fun. Like, they're riding umpires out here on the Cape Cod League. There is an intensity that I did not fully expect going out there, but it's just, it's really, really community focused. The fans love their teams. And, you know, they really treat the players. I mean, the players are really treated like royalty out there. Like, it's not plush. Like, they're not getting, they're not all getting sports cars to drive out there. They're riding school buses, quite frankly, to and from games. But, you know, the way the community wraps their arms around the players, you can tell the players appreciate it. And especially the players who are there kind of from wire to wire, you know, which is increasingly rare in today's climate. But so it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's super low key, you know, there's no, you know, you don't have to get there super early or, like, go through, you know, security and bag check and, you know, have to find a seat. And, like, it's just all very relaxed. And I had a blast, frankly. And I'm not someone who is cynical and jaded. Like, I think you and I, Runes, are aligned in the fact that we still have managed to keep our enthusiasm for the game, especially the college game. But this, I felt like, was something I needed in terms of, like, something new and exciting in college baseball that I'd not experienced. Yeah. Obviously I followed the Cape, but I'd never been out there. So this really kind of got me a little re-energized, frankly, Again, I don't think that I needed it, but whether or not I needed it, I got it. Right.
Yeah.
And so I can't recommend it enough. Like, it's also, look, I just talked about how expensive it is to go to the Cape. Free baseball game, you know, and a lot of these ballparks also have, you know, there was one Brewster, for example. You know, I went to games at Brewster, and there's a big giant playground right behind the baseball field. So you just let those kiddos,
nice,
you know, get all that energy out while, you know, you watch the game. And, you know, it's just something for everybody, kind of just a cool deal. And, you know, again, you can't beat it with the temperatures and the sea breeze and all that jazz. So I'm rambling now, but I think you can tell in my rambling that it was a cool experience, and I would like others to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah, and you're right. The summertime's a tough time because, you know, like, you're dealing with the draft, and that gives me angst. That's one of those things I can't get out of my bloodstream from coaching, is just being anxious around the draft when I have zero skin in the game. You know, the NIL and the transfer portal is, you know, those are not the most glorious headlines in our sport. And so you're right, like the Cape, I'm definitely need to do that next summer. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one thing I was going to bring up, and that feels like a natural segue, is one thing I'm interested in with the Cape and we'll be monitoring. And I think the league is aware of this. I don't think they're, you know, have their heads in the sand with this, is that they're, because of the later draft and because of the transfer portal being such a thing right smack dab in the middle of the Cape season, they're in an interesting spot where I think they're trying to figure out what they need and want to be moving forward. Because historically, and this is for the listeners, not for I'm not telling Runes anything he doesn't know. Like, typically, a Cape player is a guy who just finished his second year, going into his draft year, basically. And so it is kind of their, if you will, it's kind of their debut as prospects, right?
Yeah.
So in theory, the best guys go out to the Cape going into their third season. And it's kind of like, hey, here, basically it's signaling, hey, here are the guys you need to know for this next upcoming draft. Well, and you know, and as the summer goes on, some of those players go home and they bring in some local guys. And there's always been a smattering of fourth year guys in the league. It's not totally that, but it used to be mostly that. And now, yeah, you see a lot before the draft, because the Cape season starts while like super regionals are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see a lot of guys early on the Cape who are draft eligible now, because that's a good showcase for those guys to maybe increase their stock, to pop a little bit. If you were nicked up during the spring season, it gives you a chance to show you're healthy. Like, but then once the draft happens, those teams that went heavy on those players, well, now their roster is absolutely depleted. And then you have other teams that are kind of more focused on, let's do the traditional Cape player going into their third year. And I look at a team like Harwich, where, you know, the top of their lineup is Seaver King and Kalen Culpepper and Ethan Anderson and Devin Obi. And love, like, that, all those guys are raking this summer. And like, they look like a juggernaut in their lineup. And it's largely because they have guys going into their third year, you know, two of which spent a lot of time with Team USA this summer. So there's like an imbalance in the way the teams are constructed, which gives it kind of a weird feel. And then secondarily, and this is something that they just don't have any control over, is that just generally speaking, Runes, we're in kind of a climate where fewer and fewer players are actually going out for traditional summer ball. Yeah. And I think you see it especially on the mound, where, you know, I've got a list of some guys that impressed me on the Cape and the collegiate national team. It's not a lot of arms. And that's understandable, right? People are especially aggressive now in protecting arms. And so that's kind of always been a thing, that certain arms just didn't go out in the summer, but it's less and less. And there's, on the Cape especially, the national team is one thing, but on the Cape especially, that's more of a stage for talented guys who haven't taken that big jump yet to start to take that jump, more so than established star pitchers kind of showing off and showing out ahead of their draft year. So anyway, long story short, and then, oh, by the way, there is pressure to win there, you know?
Yeah, like, right.
That's not just the townies, you know, like wanting their team to win. Like, that's one thing. But like, the people associated with those teams have a lot of pride in winning games in the Cape. Like, it is a real league to those people and in general. So it's also not just like you can say, hey, you know what? No big deal. Like, this team just wasn't very good because we had a bunch of guys get drafted. Well, that's not really going to fly.
No.
So they're really kind of trying to serve a whole bunch of masters, and it'll look, it's still, I mean, they're doing fine. Like, I'm not worried about it, but it's just, it is an interesting place they find themselves is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what you said that, Joe, like at the beginning, it's kind of like they're trying to, you know, so much has changed around the Cape. Now they have to change kind of how they fit into this new, you know, thunderstorm that is the summer of college baseball. Let me ask you a couple follow-up questions on the Cape. So we'll save players for maybe next week when Fitzy comes back, because he's actually on the Cape right now. So why don't we save the player discussion? Although I do have one player I want to ask you about. Seaver King, Wake Forest has had a phenomenal offseason. And Seaver King is a kid that played at Wingate, Division II, made the national team. Like, I can't remember the last time a Division II player made the national team. No offense. Like, Division II's got excellent baseball, but just don't see that. And he and Chase Burns are both transferring into Wake. Did you get a look at Seaver King, or what do you got on him so far?
I did. Yeah. I saw him actually with the collegiate national team first. And then I saw him for one game. He just got back to the Cape as I was leaving. So I saw him for one game, but his first game back with Harwich, the first three at bats, just line drive, line drive, line drive, all with 98 plus exit velos. And look, for those who might not be impressed by that, these are wood bats, right? So like,
yeah, different animal.
In the spring, you see 110s all over the place. Like this is not that, right? Yeah. So, I mean, so he just comes in there just really raking. You know, his average was one of the highest in the Cape when he first left. It is a real bat speed, real line drive stroke. Frankly, Wake could have really used him in the postseason,
right?
You know, like, because a swing like his in Omaha, when the ball's just not flying like it was early in that tournament, his swing would have cut through that with line drives. And so he's also an interesting guy defensively, twitchy, you know, fast twitch athlete. He's a shortstop level athlete, but I think he might be a better fit at third base if I had to really peg it, but he could play second, third, or short. So Wake's going to have a lot of flexibility with him to put him wherever they want him. And he's just a really cool story. He's a guy who you mentioned, he went to Wingate, and he's from Athens, Georgia. And so I actually messaged somebody around the Georgia program, was like, how'd this guy get out of town? And he's like, well, he was, you know, 5'10", 160 coming out of high school. And then he got to Wingate and grew 2 inches and put on 25 pounds and, you know, and then this offseason, it just so happens that, you know, maybe he would have gone to Georgia, but he was in the portal when they were switching coaches. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe he would have gone to Wake Forest regardless, but Georgia really wasn't in a position to get him, basically. But he's just a guy who was a classic late bloomer, but he's a really, really fun player, super good athlete. Like, he's a legit dude. And I think he's a great hitter for that Wake Forest ballpark. He's not a traditional power guy, but in that ballpark, especially when the wind's going, he's going to square enough balls up. You know, I think he'll be a double digit home run guy just because he's going to find the barrel a lot.
Yeah. And that's a recruiting profile that can slip, right? Like right infielder, who's probably not a shortstop, undersized, not a plus runner. Like, how much scholarship can you really put in that kid? But then as you get to know the kid and then he gets reps, you're like, okay, that was a special player. He just had a fairly ambiguous profile. Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, Joe, let me ask you this. So one of the fun things has been we've got the Cape game streaming on the D1 Baseball website, and I've been using it as background noise. Now, I'm not plugged in as much as I need to, but I think you have done a better job than me. So not all streams are created equal, right? Like, we're often critical of the Stanford stream when it comes to that type of stuff. So give me your best three streams on the Cape as I start. I got to lock myself in here more.
Yeah, no, it's fair. So I've watched a little bit of probably all of them at this point, I think, and they've all been at their best. They're very good. Now, understand, this is for the listeners, understand that Cape can be windy. A lot of times they're working with cameras that are, you know, rigged up not as sturdily as they are at college ballparks, and certainly obviously big league ballparks, because again, these are public parks they're playing these games at. They don't have a lot of media rigging, if you will. I'll go Kutuit. I was actually just watching one of their games earlier. The great Steven Schock is apparently probably by now has been on that broadcast, because he is also on the Cape right now.
Love it.
Kutuit alum, 2018 pitching MVP of the Cape Cod League.
Wow. Go Cavaliers.
Yeah. So Kutuit is a good one. Like their broadcast team, really good broadcast team. And that's the other thing here too, is that these kids that are doing those broadcasts are, I mean, this is basically their Cape Cod League too.
Yeah.
Like the best of the best in broadcasting and college broadcasting come to the Cape. So
yeah, I think Mike Monaco did games on the Cape.
Mike Monaco. Point. Yep. Cape alum. So, you know, your favorite broadcaster probably either in baseball, probably either did the Cape or wanted to when he was in college, and whether or not they got there. I'll also go Bourne. Mm-hmm. Is a good one, and Orleans.
Okay, love it.
Is another good one. Again, they're all like, you really can't go wrong. But there are some those are three that I've watched that I really, really like. And the difference maker for me is those three have multiple camera angles.
Yeah,
like huge. So you'll get the center field cam, but then you'll also get the behind home plate cam, and also, you know, as a batter steps to the plate, you'll get the camera on his open side.
Yep.
You know, when he's at the plate. So you do get those kind of multiple, and not only is that just kind of nice, but it keeps it from looking monotonous, right? So it's easier to stay focused on the game when you're getting dynamic looks. And they also, those have good graphics. Not all the streams have graphic packages. Theirs do. So that's a nice little add-on.
I will say one thing, and we'll wrap the Cape. On their website, when you go to the scoreboard, they have a really cool thing called like Game Live or Game. It's like a version of Game Changer where you can follow the names. I've done our good friend Peter Flaherty from Baseball America, PD Three Sticks, if you will. Colin Deaver, 2023 award winner, Omaha Press Box Rookie of the Year. But he helped me find that website. That's very helpful for following along as well. Hey, so Joe, you have a really cool thing going on SEC Extra, where you're doing transfer portal updates. And, you know, obviously the SEC is the center of the universe when it comes to transfers and the high profile transfers. So, you know, we're not going to talk about Chase Burns, but, you know, like, here's some names I read in your most recent, your July 18th piece. Was it July 18th? Does that sound right?
Yep,
whatever.
Yesterday.
Okay. Gosh, is it that late in July already? Holy heck.
Indeed, it is.
So Parks Harbor was in the portal. I'm going to bring up Christian Little. I thought that's interesting. He has to go back to LSU because he's already transferred once. Derek Fabian, Florida Auburn. Hey, Ole Miss, Luke Hill, ASU, Andrew Fisher, Duke, Jackson Ross, FAU. Ole Miss has really gotten after it in the portal. Mac Bingham going from Arizona to LSU. That's a good get for those guys. So that's just kind of what I rattled off, but you authored it, Joe. What are some things that have stuck out to you as you've done the transfer portal updates?
I think the biggest thing is that last year we kind of knew by now that, because I think Skeens committed to LSU right about now. It might have been a little bit later a year ago, but right around this time. By this point, we knew, hey, this LSU class is head and shoulders better than any other class we've got on the board. This year's been a little bit different, and that's going to be an interesting thing moving forward, because I think LSU understands that. I think Jay Johnson understands that, hey, last year we kind of caught some people flat-footed because there were a lot of programs that kind of took a wait-and-see approach on the portal, which is understandable, but also means those teams kind of got boat raced when it came to shout out to Jake Mintz, got boat raced when it came to the portal, right? So this year has been different. Like, nobody is getting caught flat-footed. Now, whether or not you really want to be involved in it is a whole other deal, but nobody's ambivalent about the portal right now. So what that has led to, I think, is that I'm not really sure, even within the SEC, who you would say has, and I have my trusty little notes here to make sure I don't miss anything, but who stands out as the best class. I think you could make an argument for, you know, Tennessee might have two of the best handful of players in Billy Amick and Cannon Peebles, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you could make a case there. LSU has Justin Lohr from Xavier, great reliever. Gage Jump, high-end pitcher from UCLA that's been injured. Cade Woods, electric reliever from Alabama. You mentioned Mac Bingham. Like, Georgia has the biggest class. They don't have the star power, but they have the biggest class. They've been really aggressive. But I think Ole Miss is probably the one that has stood out to me most. You know, I think they obviously with what happened last year, they kind of knew they needed a hard reset on the roster. And, It was a veteran club. That's the hard part too, is that they weren't good last year, and it's not like they were really young. They were actually pretty old. And so they brought in Andrew Fisher from Duke, Luke Hill, Arizona State, Liam Doyle from Coastal Carolina, big left-handed arm.
Ooh, that's
Jackson Ross. Yeah, Jackson Ross, FAU, Trayson Hughes from Mercer, and then a name that most people don't know that I actually really like, a guy named Kyler Carmack from Arkansas State, who's, you know, up to mid-90s with his fastball with one of the, supposedly, I've not seen a lot of it live, I've seen some video, but supposedly one of the best changeups in the country. So, you know, he's a guy who I think could be a real difference maker for them, considering how, frankly, how poor their pitching was for most of last year. So if you made me choose which is the best SEC transfer class, I'm probably going Ole Miss, but my big picture thought is that there's really not a number one with a bullet in the league. And I think that's more interesting, certainly. And then if you talk about nationally, it's hard to beat what Wake has done. You mentioned Wake being a player here, and they're not a school that I would have pegged 2 or 3 years ago as being a big player in the transfer portal. It's a academic private school, so getting players in is sometimes a sticking point. It's expensive, so unless guys are on big scholarships or come from, you know, moneyed backgrounds, or they're able to put some NIL money towards these players, which is probably part of it. But it's just not a school that fits the profile of the teams that you would think would be big in the transfer portal, and yet here they are with, you know, Chase Burns and Seaver King, who you could argue might be the two biggest prizes in the portal this season, and at least maybe until Luke Holman commits, because he's kind of the one guy. He's the one guy still left out there. LSU
and Braden Montgomery State, too, right?
He's still Braden Montgomery. Yes.
Yep. It's fascinating. It's so much chaos in this thing, Joe. Like I think it's what you said a few minutes ago really struck me. Where, like, I'm going to the Cape next summer because I really needed this summer. Like I catch myself caught up in the chaos and the swirl of the transfer portal and NIL. And like, I deleted Twitter off my phone the other day for the first time in my life, because I was just like, I need a break. Like this is, there's so much angst around it. But I think what's really interesting about this whole thing is, you know, NIL, like it's just not normalized yet. Right. Like that's, I think, the part that's unsettling. You know, I think about NIL could be used a lot of different ways. Like you don't have to use NIL to chase transfers. I think what if there's a program out there, when you said Wake Forest, this struck me, like what if there's a program out there where you say, hey, I'm going to invest NIL into my upperclassmen that I want to keep, and I'm going to release scholarships into our freshman class, incoming classes, such that if my competitors are still stuck at 11.7, NIL gets me to 15.7. And I create an advantage in my own neighborhood. Now, I'm not talking about the SEC right now. The SEC is like, this is the AL East, right? Like that's a different stratosphere. But the SEC is wild. Look at Braden Montgomery. Mississippi State's program is so strong. And of course, they won the national title a couple years ago, and they went the 3 straight Omahas a couple years ago. They've got, like, you know, as John Cohen and his wife Nell would say, they've got the Carnegie Hall of college baseball. I mean, that facility is, it's, I could argue it's a better place to play than for the Tampa Bay Rays. Like the dude is that amazing that they've finished 13th and 14th in this league. They've missed Hoover 2 years in a row, and they are very much in play for the best transfer in the country in Braden Montgomery. I mean, that may sound like I'm criticizing Mississippi State. I don't, like, that's a fact. Like, they finished 13th and 14th. That's factual. But my opinion of their program is not, I'm not alone there. Like, it's so, the allure is so great that, you know, Braden Montgomery could be going from a program that's been to 3 straight Omahas to Mississippi State. I mean, that speaks volumes about how attractive your place is.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, it's a great point, because they've been on a number of these high end guys. They're mm-hmm. they're playing with the big boys, and so it does show that. You know, I think it's also heartening that some of these players and whoever's advising them are taking a wider view of it, which I think is good, you know, not just based on the results of last year. I would like, you talk about NIL. One of the things that, and this is true in all sports, feathers get ruffled in college football about this more often than not. Look, NIL is part of the deal. And I understand that there's kind of this weird thing where it's not supposed to be a recruiting inducement, but like nobody can really tell you exactly how it's not, right? So let's set that aside. I would just like people to kind of be a little more honest about it, or just be a little more, just be upfront about it, to where, and I understand the, you know, coaches that are doing the recruiting don't always, I believe them when they say they don't always know exactly what's happening from like an NIL perspective, because they're not necessarily in charge of that. So I'm not calling them liars. But what I'm saying is, like, you do know what you're working with. It is your job to kind of know what you're working with from a recruiting standpoint. And so coaches are very, they kind of almost shy away from talking about the role that NIL plays, unless, of course, they're complaining about other programs. But I would just like coaches to be like, we are fortunate to have a community around our program that really supports us and wants us to win and wants the players to be happy here. So yeah, we've got NIL money. And if you want some of it, come here.
Right.
That's legal. Like, and again, I understand you don't want to get in NCAA trouble because they will try to thread the needle of telling you that, well, that's a recruiting inducement. Okay. I do understand that.
Yeah.
But I think there is a tactful way you can say it of like, look, our players are well supported here. Like we're, and you can couch it in, we are very fortunate to be in the position we're in, that we have, you know, business partners and individuals who in our collective or whatever, who want to support our players and make sure they have everything they need. And if you want to be a part of that, you know, the closest we get is Jay Johnson in Omaha saying, you know, this is the best place for transfers to be, which I loved. Be open about it. Because this is the game now. Like, it just is, whether you like it or not. And Lord knows you and I don't like everything about it. But if it's the game we're playing, like, don't, I just don't think there should be any shame in saying like, hey, yeah, we have NIL money to spend 100%.
Yeah. I'm curious to learn more about good ideas. How do we normalize it? Like, is 1 year free agency a good thing? But, you know, again, like, I think the NCAA, Kendall pointed this out to me, the NCAA has taken a hard line on the one-time transfer. Like, it's the one-time transfer. And like I said, like, my personal opinion is that Christian Little going back to LSU is not what's best for his career. Like, this is me, Mike Rooney, talking, you know, not the Littles, obviously, you know, that this is just some talking head offering an opinion. I would personally rather see Christian Little go to a mid-major program where, you know, there's not the same pressure to win that exists at LSU, where he's guaranteed to get 100 innings if he's healthy. And just, I think he's so talented. I would like to see him. I'm thinking of Josh Hatcher when he went from Mississippi State to Kennesaw State, and really just getting out of the pressure enabled him to thrive. But I'm also not in favor of just like one-time transfer is chaotic. If we make it transfer as much as you want, then I feel like that just gets, it's already feels a little untenable. So again, I'm trying to reserve judgment because I feel like it hasn't normalized yet. Like, you know, hey, Willie Bloomquist, I coached, I love Willie B. His comments in the press conference the other day are getting a lot of heat right now. And, you know, I would encourage anyone to watch that press conference because it's really a fascinating reflection and conversation. And, you know, the truth is the context around Willie's comment is, He was critical of Luke Hill, which is kind of a, you know, that's a party foul. But the question Willie was asked was, hey, Luke Hill is transferring. Are you worried that the rest of your veterans are going to transfer? And you could tell Willie was, that triggered him. He was offended by that, you know? And so he then was critical of Luke Hill, which is regrettable. But all that said, Joe, like I'm trying to calm myself down and just let it normalize, you know, like, hey, Luke Hill's a Baton Rouge kid. He went to Tempe, Arizona. He played really well as a freshman. You know, Willie is a really smart guy, Willie Bloomquist. Luke Hill transferring back to where he's from was always on the table. Let's call a fish a fish, right? Like, that's, you know, that's not some, like, out of left field surprise. Now, is it disappointing for Arizona State? Of course, right? Like, nobody likes to lose a good player that they really invested in. But again, like, I need to let that normalize. I need to let those types of things play out before I pull the fire alarm, I think.
Yeah, I think there's evidence to your point, Runes, because I'm with you about waiting for it to normalize. I think there is some evidence we're heading that direction. You know, I think there was a little less chaos this time around in the portal. It feels chaotic, and it still is. Like Luke Hill at the 11th hour, like, okay.
Yeah, because the chaos is the headlines. Like, that's what we're focused on. Yes.
Right. But there were, I mean, you heard the same whispers I heard. There were all kinds of players, and this is going to happen every year, even after it normalizes. There were all kinds of players that got bandied about as like, I've heard this guy's going in the portal, and a pretty small percentage of them actually ended up happening.
Yes.
And we, you know, to be fair, I'm sorry, listeners, we are not going to name those names, but it's out there. Believe me when I tell you it's out there. And most of those didn't happen. And so whether that's because the information was bad. I think that's probably true in some cases, whether it was because teams did a good job re-recruiting their roster. I'm sure that's true in some cases. Some teams looked under the couch cushions and probably found some NIL money. Right. Yeah. But I do think there was just slightly, it was still busy. We still had some surprising transfers, but if you look at a lot of the situations where we had big name transfers, right? I mean, a couple of them are, you know, Colby Shelton, Cade Woods, the Alabama guys. Okay. Well, they had a coaching change, you know, like, and okay, Jason Jackson's still on the staff, but you know, those guys didn't necessarily sign up to play for Rob Vaughn or even Jason Jackson. Right.
Yeah.
So there are some you could really kind of pick out that are like, well, those are always situations that are going to invite transfers. You know, Parks Harbor thought he was probably thought he was going to get drafted. Didn't. And now he's in a situation, well, you can't really play first base because Charlie Condon's there. And you're not really an outfielder. And, you know, so you're going to go back to third base, which is not your best position. You know, it's just like there are a lot of factors involved here. But my big picture thing is that I do think we've seen some evidence it's heading the direction of normalizing. And I think that's good. I'm with you. You know, I think last year was so chaotic. I mean, it was, you and I cannot answer this question. So I probably shouldn't even put it out there, but it's intriguing to me is that I wonder if so much of the worry about the transfer portal and the hand-wringing about the transfer portal stems from the fact that the first, like, matter of days after last year's, the first real crazy transfer portal opened, Tommy White was in the portal, right? Like, and not just a guy who was really good, because that was true, but a guy who was a sensation, right? I mean, like, what he did early in his freshman year at NC State with whatever it was, 8 bombs in 8 games or five games. I forget what it was.
Bill Simmons was tweeting about it.
Right. That got past the college baseball bubble. It got past the baseball Twitter bubble. It went into the stratosphere. And so for a guy that productive and that famous to go and, by the way, leaving a program that had been in Omaha just 2 years prior, I think that kind of rocked everybody a little bit. And I just do wonder if, even if he goes in the portal later, but the fact that he was like literally one of the first notable names to go in, I do wonder if that maybe set a tone that panicked us maybe more so than we should have been. And again, we'll never know because we can't live out the other scenario, but
yeah,
I do find that to kind of an interesting, what if, like, what if he hadn't gone in the portal? Would we feel differently about it? I don't know.
Yeah. Cause it's, and there's like, I'm going to call myself on this out on this. It's a little hypocritical because, like, I have a real job. You had a real job previous to coming to D1 in Baseball America. And in my real job, there's no transfer portal, right? Like, I'm in medical sales. If I want to hear what a competitor has to say, I do it I do it in the shadows, right? Like, I don't put myself in the portal. I talk to them. I hear them out. Now, I'm not doing that because I love my day job and I've been there 11 years. That would be ridiculous. But
just that in case your bosses are listening, yes, right? Is that what you're doing there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. So they already know about my baseball, obsession. So, but the point is I would do it in the shadows instead of entering in the transfer portal. And is that even any better? I don't know. I will say this, my one concern, and this is not fair for me to say, but I'm just going to put it out there. Like, NC State's baseball fan base, like, I'm concerned for them. Like, 2 years in a row, their best player, or, you know, like, maybe, you know, in the conversation of best player, bolts for another program. Do we risk, like, there's a couple scenarios. Like, do we risk losing that fan base because they're just like, what's the point? Or do they become more loyal to the players that end up finishing there? I don't know. I don't know what none of us know the answer to that question either. It's interesting, you know, like, again, I come back to the word normalizing, taking a breath. We don't know how this is going to play out yet.
Yeah, I think that's right. Right on. Yep. Yep.
Hey, let's finish with this, Joe. So you guys have that new series that snuck up on me, quite honestly, SEC season in review, and you're going one team at a time. Tell us about that and tell us your favorite one so far.
Yeah, it's just a way. So Mark and I have split the league kind of in half. He's doing 7. I'm doing 7. We went from the teams that finished at the bottom to the teams that were at the top. So we're still working through. We're about halfway through. It's just basically one final, putting a bow on the season that was, to kind of wash our hands of it and start to get our minds right for 2024. So you know, we name a lineup MVP, a pitching staff MVP, a turning point moment in the season, a highlight in the season. And then we look at what's ahead basically and start to, you know, look through the crystal ball to figure out what's coming next. My favorite one so far, because it's a fascinating, fascinating team, and they were all season, is Kentucky. That's the of the ones we've published, that's the one that's most fascinating to me, because here's the thing. We didn't know what to make of them in this past season, right? I mean, they won 4 SEC series and hosted a regional. Like, it's just a weird, like, it just feels like they talk about threading the needle. Like, they threaded the most narrow path to hosting a regional that could have possibly been threaded. Their non-conference schedule, they, you know, came up 777s on, basically, on the slot machine. They won some big games at the right times. That South Carolina sweep late in the season came at exactly the right time. It was right before South Carolina really kind of torpedoed, right? So they did that, and that's a credit to them. That's not taking anything away. And they bring back a lot of interesting pieces. So they're going to bring back, I'm scrolling to it now, at least on paper, Devin Burks at catcher, Emelian Petre at second, Grant Smith at shortstop, like super underrated so defensive good. Shortstop, by so the way. Good. Like he is, like he, to me, he's better than Ryan Ritter was. But Ryan Ritter, I feel like, got a little more love because I think Ryan Ritter was flashier. I think Grant Smith is steadier. Like he's just, every ball to him is just an automatic out.
I think both of us will take both of them, by the way. Like, yes and yes.
100%.
But you're right. Yeah. But Grant Smith is the auto out. Like, if it's hit to him, you don't need to run to first. You're out.
Right. Precisely. You know, Nolan McCarthy, Ryan Waldschmidt in the outfield, Ruben Church, like a 20th year senior. You know, Ryan McCoy didn't have the breakout that people thought he would, but he's swinging it better in the Cape right now. So his breakout year might be coming along. And then on the mound, Mason Moore, their relief ace, Zach Lee, Travis Smith, who's probably actually the best arm on the team, Ryan Hagano, Jackson Novi. They've got another good portal class coming in. And yet, I can't help but feel like this team might actually be better talent-wise in 2024, but the SEC record could easily be worse.
Yeah, that's always in play. Yep.
And that's just life in the SEC by and large, but I do just wonder if, like, last year they kind of caught a little bit of lightning in the bottle with a lot of their transfers, just kind of really, you know, Gillum and Jackson Gray and obviously Waldschmidt, but, you know, and maybe their hit rate isn't quite as good this time around. And, you know, maybe that's part of it, but there's also a scenario, right, where if their player development hits, you know, is it crazy to think they could be they hosted last year. Is it crazy to think they could be a top eight? I don't think it's crazy. I'm not betting on it, but that's a pretty veteran team they're bringing back, and maybe they've turned a corner. So it feels to me like there is a very wide range of outcomes for that club. And so that's been the most fascinating season in review for me to work through, because I still don't 100% know what to make of the season they had. Fantastic season, that unmitigated success, but in terms of how they got there. And then I will be fascinated to see what they do in 2024, because I'd believe just about anything, honestly.
Yep. And they had a coaching change. So if I'm not, Will Coggin is going to go with Wes Johnson to Georgia. Does that sound right to you?
That's correct. Yes. Yeah. Will Coggin is out. Or moved on. Yeah.
Oh, and wow, their new recruiting coordinator is Austin Cousineau. How about that? Austin Dan Rozelle has done a great job there. So that's good fill-in by Minge right there. That's well done.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good staff. Like, I think Dan Rozelle was a good and inspired pitching coach hire, just because, you know, he had worked at East Carolina, and the type of arms that he's working with at Kentucky aren't that different. Now, they're more talented, generally speaking, but at East Carolina, you're not getting, with some exceptions, but you're not getting the, you know, the kid who, the draftable kid out of high school. You're turning a raw, you know, a piece of raw clay into a sculpture by the time he's done. And, you know, Kentucky kind of has to play that game too, right? They'll get some high end guys. I mean, Ryan Hagenow was one of those guys coming out of high school. They'll get those guys, but more often than not, you're working with some guys you're looking to mold, some guys who are pretty raw. And so I think he's a good pitching coach for that specific scenario.
Yeah. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. They really had an incredible year. So good stuff. Jose, I needed this. This was good therapy for Coach Rooney. Thank you for that. For the listeners, save 30. When you go to get a subscription, check out, type in save 30 and old coupon Kendall. We'll get you 30% off. It's got to be an annual subscription. That's D1 Baseball. That is that's SEC Extra. If you are ready to turn the page on 2023 and get excited about the 2024 season, I'm in the same boat. We're in this together. So get a subscription, save 30 at checkout. We'll save you 30%. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit subscribe. That is very helpful for us. And more podcasts. We're trying to do more podcasts, more quicker podcasts, or quicker podcasts in higher quantity. Joe and David Seifert and I have one scheduled coming up in the next couple of days to go over the college national team hitters, because we did the one on the pitchers. When Fitzy comes back from the Cape, we'll get an update on that. And Kendall will get us an update on the Klein Texas Bengals and the great stonemason Jar Rogers. We have a great picture in our chat today of Kendall with Mason's helmet on, which is just glorious. So I love that. Joseph, appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Runes, happy to do it. We finally, you know, the wheat has been separated from the chaff. You and I finally had a chance to just the two of us and really, really chop it up. So this is what the people have been wanting. I just know it.
Yes, that's right. Hashtag chop it up. So that is it. Hey, everybody, have a great week, and we will catch you next time on the D1 Baseball Podcast. The D1 Baseball Podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.